Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We have a loaded show today. Plenty of information to bring you. We got DJ BNMA, ESPN NFL Nation Texans reporter. We got Chris Sanders, Run TMC. You know what we do each and every week, so we'll bring that. And we got David James over there making this thing sound pretty. What's up, David?
What's going on, guys? Glad to be back here. Let's do this.
Yes, sir. Each and every week, talking with TD, this is what we do. I want to open up, though, just taking a look back at that game. You know, this past week, it was not exactly a pretty win, but they managed to find a way to make it happen. And I think this is just, like, this is the Titans. This is what they are, folks. You're not going to see pretty wins. You're not going to see lopsided games or anything like that. Everything is going to be close. I apologize if you're a fan that you know, has heart problems or anything like that, because I know it's going to test it. But no, all jokes aside, man, this team, they always keep it close. They find ways to win. And I think that's just something that speaks to, like, the grit that is on this team. And that's something I asked Mike Vrabel about. Do you guys look for particular traits in any player, you know, when you're looking to bring him aboard or just make him a part of the team? Here's what Mike Vrabel had to say about that.
Well, I mean, we'd like to have some guys with resolve and some grit, some mental and physical toughness. You know, that they care about the team and they, you know, are doing, you know, will be willing to do whatever they can do to help the team.
So notice how he said the grit, you know, and how he said he looks for guys, you know, who have, you know, went through some adversity and things like that. And that's exactly what Ben Jones went through.
Mm-hmm.
Off the field and on the field. I don't know exactly what the issues were off the field, but he kind of touched on it. When he said, you know, some GI issues, excuse me, that's a tongue tire right there. But nevertheless, he was able to work through it. And that, we're not saying GI, meaning like military GI, meaning gastrointestinal. Ben Jones, side story, man. That guy, he used to eat like crazy, crazy things. So I would imagine that. At this age, you know, his stomach is kind of trying to get him back. I don't know. But nevertheless, he went out there, and, I mean, there were times where they had to pick him up off the ground. And he went out there. He waved him off. I'm not coming out. I'm going to keep going. He did come out. I think it was one snap. Corey Levin, excuse me, went in for him. But the moment, right, he and Mike Vrabel embracing after the game. I retweeted the video. And just the caption for my retweet was, this is an example of why these players will run through a building for Mike Vrabel. And that's really the case, man. Like, these guys love that dude. And maybe two or three in the 5 years I've been here, I can name two. It didn't really vibe with them. And one of the two is not A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown and Mike Vrabel were very close. Don't let the recent comments like make you think that they weren't. They were very close. But I think, you know, when you look at Mike Vrabel, the thing that impresses me is his ability to make emotional deposits. And it's funny because it's not just with the players, with the other coaches. It's even with us, the media. I mean, there are times where he has asked, like, my daughter Devin is here with me now. She met Coach Vrabel when they were doing the cleanup, the tornado. Her and I went out there. And helped out with that. And she met Coach Ray, like a five-minute encounter. There are multiple times where, hey, TD, how's your daughter?
That's just the type of guy he is, man. Yeah. That's special. Like, you don't really see that a lot with coaches, honestly.
And not just with coaches and players, coaches with media.
Yeah,
that's different.
So exactly.
I give him that's an example of just how. Because everybody sees like the flag drop.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this past
Little
game,
Salt Bay.
How he did it. Yeah, everybody sees that and they think, oh well, you know, the guy's a jerk. He's a buffoon. He's this. He's that. No, he's actually a very person. You know what? I'm not going to continue to explain it. I'm going to let Ben Jones explain it. Here's Ben Jones talking about his relationship with Mike Vrabel.
Playing this game for so long, we have a relationship. It's been before here. I was with him 2 years in Houston. And just the passion you put into the game, how much the game means to me, him, our families, and how much he cares about us. We had a lot of – we've been through a lot together, from family stuff for me to him always being there if I need him. He cares about us. It's a family here. It's not just – we're not just the X and O's. He truly cares about us.
So I say all that to say what? Well, these are the type of things that form a bond and make you able to knuckle up and really come through late in games. And there's a confidence that they have. You know, that's I asked Ryan Tannehill about that. You know, just the way that this team is able to constantly come out on top, winning these games. And that's what he said. They have just so much stored confidence that they could win these close games, and they believe they're going to win them. And look, outside of the Giants game, they, for the most part, have won those. And that's something you just continue to see. Got to shout out the defense, too, man. You know, and this is another thing that really stands out. You have guys that come in either from A, off the street, or B, another team's practice squad, and they contribute. The one touchdown in this game for the Titans, Andrew Adams, you know, he came up, he picked it off, and it was a beautiful read. If he didn't get it, Christian Fulton was going to. But somebody was going to get it. It's probably better that he got it because he had that momentum. And, you know, he had to get somewhere shoes on, and he scored. He scored the touchdown. He housed it. But Bud Dupree also, you know, he's a guy. You know what? Let's rewind. Before I get on Bud Dupree, I'm going to talk about another guy that came in and contributed, and that's Terrence Mitchell. And look, man, like, he got the business given to him by Mac Hollins in his first game. Look, the guy came in Wednesday, started on Sunday. These are things that are going to happen. But to his credit, when I talked to him that Wednesday after the game, he acknowledged that, hey, you know what? I cut up. I had some issues. This is what happened. This is what I can't let happen. But he kept his head down and kept working. Gave up a completion to Michael Pittman Jr. Peanut Tillman punched it out. He did his Peanut Tillman imitation and punched it out, and that sealed the deal. The Titans got the ball back. They were able to kneel on it. Victory formation. That's everybody's favorite formation. And the game was over. Two guys, both signed on the same day, contributing. And it was really dope that Mike Vrabel, in the locker room after the game, the post-game speech, he got those guys in the mix, and they broke them down, family on three. I thought that was pretty cool. But Bud Dupree, I touched on Bud. Or started to. I'm going to say this. That team plays with a different level of energy when Bud Dupree is on the field. Right, wrong, or indifferent, they do. He had direct impacts on two interceptions. I'm smiling, so you know I'm about to mention David Long Jr. I can't help but smile when I watch him play because I love the passion and energy that he plays with. And his interception, the second one, that came Bud Dupree, and I mean, that whole front got pressure, but Bud Dupree was a part of it and caused Matt Ryan an ill-advised throw. David Long doing what he does pregame. You watch him work out at the home games, folks, at the home games, right? Nissan State or any game that you're at. Watch pregame Brian Bell, the assistant strength and conditioning coach. Watch him work with David Long. You'll see him dropping back and weaving and doing things. And it's so crazy because his two interceptions, the one against the Commanders, the one against the Colts this past week, the motions that he went through were literally what he does pregame. I love to see that. You have to make your time matter. And that's what he does with that. So to see it correlate is pretty cool. But to bring us back onto the Bud Dupree side of things, Bud told me that he likes to play with energy because he feels that, you know, it's contagious, and it creates opportunities for other people to make plays. It's not just about him making plays, and that's the thing that's cool about the Titans. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and let you hear what Bud Dupree had to say. This was post-game after the Colts win.
I feel good. I just got to stay on the field, you know, be able to stay on the field. You know, creates opportunities to make plays, helps the team out, We got to take it upon myself to say hey.
It seems like this team, like the defense plays with a different level of juice when you're out there. What is it that you feel you bring that, that makes them, you know, kind of turn their game up like that?
Yeah, man, I just feel like all the time I just bring effort, and you know, I just play with effort, and I always go out there with a mindset that no one really can stop us. You know, you got to really have that edge about yourself and make sure everyone's around you. You know, it feeds out energy. You know, me being in the league for a while now, I know how big that is to go out there with that same mindset and that energy to create other opportunities for the players and just make them, you know, believe in themselves more and go out there with a mindset that we're going to dominate each and every snap.
And I know sacks are a big number, but like today, you had an impact on two interceptions, right? And it seems like here there's not as much of a reliance on sacks as much as impacting the quarterback. Is that unique to what you've seen before?
Yeah, definitely, man. You know, going in, making sure that, you know, we just creating pressure in this space somehow, some way. Doesn't matter, you know, if I almost get a sack and the guy gets an interception, well, they're still winning for us at the end of the day. So we got to go in with that mindset just to disrupt the quarterback and make more plays in the backfield.
So notice how he says there's not an emphasis on stats. That's key. Or sacks, rather. Sacks are great. But me personally, I'd rather impact the quarterback and cause a turnover. Sack strips are good. They're probably ideal. So, I mean, those are the type of things that you see with this team. I think that's really cool. I want to end it on this, though. Ryan Tannehill. Look, man. Say what you want. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. He's also not Kirk Cousins, right? I think he's better than Kirk Cousins. That's a conversation we could have. But nevertheless, when you see him go out there after that ankle injury, you got to have nothing but respect for him. And he walked out of the stadium with a boot on. And the dude just managed to finish the game. And for me, you know, when you watch that, okay, he had to come out. Malik Willis came in. Now, Todd Downing, come on, coach. I don't know about calling. I'm not going to say I don't know about. You don't make that play call to have him, you know, have to be able to push off that foot and reverse back and hand it off to Malik Willis. You don't do that. It almost cost him. But later on in that game, when he had the pressure coming down on him, and remember, we're talking about the right ankle. This is the one that he, you know, his plant foot. When he has to throw, pressure's coming, moved within the pocket, found a throwing window, delivered a strike down the field to Austin Hooper. Yeah, I said Austin Hooper. He delivered a throw too. You can't really say that often, but Hooper had three catches for 56 yards. That one right there, I think it was a 19-yarder. That was huge. Huge. Put him in position to have that field goal. And I think, you know, when you look at Ryan Tannehill, Jeffrey Simmons said he's the toughest quarterback in the NFL. Ben Jones said he's one of the toughest on the team. And we know this is a team of tough guys. But he said you normally don't say that about the quarterback. But in this case, on this team, that's what we could say. That's what Ben Jones said. I think you have to look at some of the things that Tannehill brings beyond the 300-yard passing games and four touchdown performances. You're not going to get those. But the fact of the matter is this man consistently puts that team in position to win. How does he do it? By managing the game. The only time you have those problems, the turnovers, they can rear their ugly head. But I think Tannehill is getting back to not the production level, but the efficiency of that 19 and 20 performance that he had, and that he's not turning the football over. That throw to Robert Woods, by the way, I think it was first quarter, second quarter, that throw to Robert Woods in between two to three defenders, that's a gutsy throw. And it's interesting when you have a quarterback that hates to turn the football over, make throws like that, but that's the Tannehill that we saw in 19 and 20. So I'm going to wrap it up on the Tannehill side of things. I was impressed just from a leadership perspective, a toughness perspective, a hanging in there because, look, man, that guy was getting rocked over and over and over again. It wasn't pretty, but they won the game. And that's just that's your 2022 Titans, folks. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run!
I figured I'll let that play for a second, but now it's about that time. The music's fading. The lights dim. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Palace at Auburn Hills. Tonight for you, starting at small forward, number 23, Mark Aguirre.
And now, starring in the Jefferson, Lionel Jefferson.
Now, why? Why are you going to go and do that? What are you do that for?
You know I got to get you, man. How you doing, my man?
Hey, man, life is great, man. Life is great. I have to say that, man.
Good, man.
There's no such thing as a bad day. When you get
Absolutely.
To come on and do what we do, man. Talk
Absolutely.
Shop, crack jokes. I get to call you Tyrone Hill.
I can call you Sam Cassell, man.
Hey, now watch your mouth.
Hey, before we start, man, I want to give you a shout out, man. You came to the game. You watched us play Baylor last week, man, and my receivers have much respect for you. Thanks for coming out and checking out and supporting the NBA Big Red. Appreciate you, Doc.
Oh, no doubt, man. That was a lot of fun. And, hey, I appreciate you having me out there, because you know what? I couldn't be out there and not get involved a little bit.
No. You're trying to strip the ball. I'm like, what in the world?
It's just that's the love for it in me, man. I will say this, too.
Yes.
Claiborne Richards.
Ooh.
Is the doggone truth.
Hey.
You know who he reminds me of?
Steve Largent.
Jerry Jeudy.
Ooh.
He got routes like Jerry. Man, that dude is nice, man. I will give you've done
Thank
an excellent
you.
Job with him. He is outstanding, man. I told him at halftime, I said, man, you're eating that corner alive. You hear me? And I said, you keep it up, man. You keep it up. And he went out there. And Ty Bird is nice, too, now.
He is.
He had a big catch late, you know. So, definitely, I would love to come to this one, but
Absolutely.
Got that flight to Houston. So, I'm not going to be able to make it. But, hey, when the playoffs come, we're going to figure something out because I got my wheels.
Hey, and then when you go to Houston, you got Papacito's, man. You know they got good food down there.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I'm about to go
bring me back a crab leg or something in your suitcase,
crab leg
boss.
In my suitcase. Hey. I'll see what I could do. But we got some football
Titans,
to talk, though. Some Titans to talk. I want to start it off with this, man. Because, and Tannehill, Ryan Tannehill, he walked by me in the locker room after the game. Mm-hmm. And I stopped him and, like, put my hand on his shoulder. And I leaned in. I said, yo, you one tough cookie, man. Like, I really respect you, man. And I just, to see what this dude was going through. I mean, you got these guys. Dennis Daly is struggling, you know, and Tannehill is just getting blasted. And it's not just Daly. I mean, no one's perfect, right? Everybody has bad moments.
Right,
but the problem is the bad moments for those guys up front leads to Tannehill getting body rocked, and it's happening so much.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Ryan Tannehill as far as how – I mean, you've been out there. You played with a guy, we'll get into him, who was someone that single-handedly inspired the team because of his willingness to go out there and take a beating. What are your thoughts on Tannehill?
You know, we always talk about what makes a leader. You know, we always say, oh, who's a great leader as a quarterback? It's the guy that makes everybody around you better. And that's where the leader is. It's not about grabbing people by the face mask and throwing clipboards. That's not leadership. That's being an idiot. This guy leads by example. And I'm going to tell you why he leads by example. This guy hurts his ankle, gets taped up, and figures out a way on a bum ankle to come back and try to win the game, not for himself, but for his teammates. He's putting his life, he's putting his situation on the line, not for himself, but to try to get a victory. That's the kind of cat that you want to follow. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about it later. It's talking about Steve McNair. Steve McNair won his teammates over by his toughness, his tenacity, his attitude. He just reminded me of this. He reminded me of a lion. A lion wasn't the biggest. A lion wasn't the strongest. A lion wasn't the fastest. The lion wasn't the smartest. But he thought he was. That's exactly how Tannehill is. He's a lion. That offensive line might not be the best, but they're Lions because they think they can win.
Yeah, and that's the key. They think and believe that they can win. And that's something I asked Tannehill about that on Wednesday, just because this man, they're always winning these close games. And it's disgusting looking. Like, Sunday's game was, if you like offensive football, you'll probably vomit because it was really bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they still managed to win the game. And he said that that confidence that they have within each other is why they always win those close games. And I know it was a nine point, but it was closer beyond the box score. Keeping with the McNair theme, though, I mean, you've been in the huddle with him.
Yes.
You have to have some stories, man.
Let's
huddle up by the fireplace. You know what I mean? Get the book out, and we're going to have some milk and cookies, and you're going to tell us a story.
Well, I'm going to tell you one story, but I'm going to tell you another story that really won me over with Steve McNair. The first one, they were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it was 1999, and he jumped. He made like a quarterback run, and he jumped, and he gave his body over, and he did like a helicopter in the end zone. Now, that was great. That was spectacular. That was awesome. But let me tell you a story where he really won me over. We were playing the Dallas Cowboys. I think it was the night before Christmas. And we're in the huddle, this and that, and, you know, Steve McNair, you know, running the ball. And he gets hit. So he gets back up, and his finger is twisted the other way.
Mm.
I mean, twisted the other way. And Eddie George grabs him, and, you know, Wycheck grabs him. It's like, man, you need to get out of the game. This is all he said. I'm all right. It was that comment. We're like, he was just like, I'm all right.
Mm.
He gets up. He calls the play. He gets ready to get it from the center, and all you see him do is pop his finger back in.
Oh,
he popped his finger back in, gets the ball, runs a 46-yard touchdown.
Wow.
hey, if I'm breaking my finger in the game and my finger's turned the opposite way, you're going to have to call my mama, my auntie, grandma and them. Mudd
call
them,
the whole village,
Big
huh?
Shirley, to come get me out of there. Yeah. Everybody.
Big Shirley, come rub your back, huh?
Yeah. And this is all he said. I'm all right. That's all he said.
That's crazy, man.
I'm all right. And as he's – listen, as he's calling the cadence, TD, he pops it back in.
Mm.
That's crazy. And then I remember we were playing in the Super Bowl. And, you know, the last drive, right? He's dog tired. I mean, he's dog tired. He's so tired that when they signal in the play, I think it was Wycheck or somebody called the play for him because he was dog tired.
Wow.
And then the next play, he makes that miraculous scramble.
Yes.
And he goes to Kevin Dyson.
Crazy.
Come on, man. You can't teach that. You can't teach toughness. Sometimes he may not be the most accurate quarterback, but you can darn well count on this guy that will lay it on the line to pop his finger in and be tired to be like, and the next play he tries to do everything he can to try to get us to win that victory.
No doubt. And that's, you know, that's the champion. And I wish, man, I hate the fact that I never got to cover Steve McNair. I remember, you know, going to an HBCU, playing HBCU football, you know, seeing him be a guy that was up for the Heisman. And then a top pick like that, I'm just like, yo, it was just crazy to me. You know what I mean? So I wish I could have just gotten the privilege to cover him. Tell me another story, man. Like what would you say is the toughest injury you've seen him recover from?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, can I just talk about the 1999 season we were on our way to the Super Bowl?
Sure.
He's getting driven off the field, and you're talking about his sternum. Sternum.
I said, this is the story I wanted, and my bad for stopping your flow.
No, you good. No, you good. But he got his sternum. He got hit in the sternum, and they're willing him off. And, you know, he's on the cart, and his head is back, and he's sweating, and it looks like Steve McNair's done. Nobody knows the story but me and Steve McNair. I call him in the hospital. I said, man, I was just checking on you. He said, man, I don't think I can do this anymore. He said, I'm done. He said, I'm hurting so bad. I said, Mac, you're a dog. You can do it. I said, we got your back. The next thing you know, he comes back to practice, and, you know, they got Neil O'Donnell starting. He wins four games in a row. That was the Pittsburgh game. He's been sitting on the sidelines the whole time. The last four games, just kind of sitting, whatever. Neil O'Donnell gets hit in the mouth, bloody nose. All of a sudden, it's fourth and 10. We're in a three wide receiver. We're in a 3-by-1, 10 personnel. I'm the number one wide receiver on the outside. I do a little kind of like a little seam route. He throws it high. I catch it, first down. Then the next play, they throw it to Aaron Kenny, touchdown. We win Pittsburgh. That was his turning point of his career. A guy that hurt his sternum, a guy that was down for the count, but he comes back and say, you know what, even though I was hurt, I'm going to come back and lead my team to victory. That's a leader right there, boss.
Yeah, that's major, man. That's major. We could do the rest of this segment on the stories, but we're going to save that. I want to shift back to this modern-day Titans team and just look at the receivers, because you had a question for me before we got on the air, so I tabled it. I'll let you ask it again.
Yeah, do you think they need another wide receiver?
Diggity darn right. I do. Listen, I don't think it's going to happen as far as Claypool, but I've been kind of pounding the table for this for the last 2 weeks or so. If they could get a guy like that, and it goes back to, and you know what, shout out Cody Hollister, because they had one-on-one backside, no safety. He was going against Stephon Gilmore, and he had a 27-yard catch, released inside, gave him a little body physical at the top of the route and caught the ball. Good job, Cody Hollister. Yeah. They need to do that more. And this is something that we talked about last week, about just taking a shot. But it's more than just taking a shot when you got a guy like Claypool. In my opinion, like, that's 80-20. You know what I mean? It's not a 50-50 ball. It's 80-20. He's 6'4", 238. He got hops.
Yep.
He has speed. Back shoulder all day, man. You could do that with him. So the thing that's interesting to me, Chris Conley has joined the Titans, right? It's part of their active roster now. Signed off of the Chiefs practice squad. But I remember him coming out of Georgia, and he was a guy that had hops and speed. Now, this was quite some time ago. But if he could still use those hops, if he could still get up there with that big body, I would back shoulder with him too, one-on-one backside. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and I agree with you 100%. The reason why I said no at first, and you basically just kind of convinced me because I believe that you're right, is it's just the identity of the offense. You know, the identity of the offense runs through Derek, and, you know, the wide receivers catch the ball once in a while, and you don't really need a big-time wide receiver because of Derek Henry. Now, when they started, I know every team loads the box, but when the Titans are down by 15, down by 16, down by 17, then now you're going to have to pass the ball, and I think that's when they get in trouble right there.
Yep,
that's when they get in trouble. But they're always ahead of the game. The only time they've been behind was Buffalo.
Yeah,
and you see what happened. Oof. But now, if you look at every other game that they play, they've always been up 14-0, 24-0. So they didn't have to pass the ball. They let Derrick Henry run the ball. But what happens when you play Kansas City and it starts to become a shootout and you're down 21-0? That's when the problem's going
to
happen.
Well, we're about to see in a couple of weeks, ain't we? Shoot, they about to go to Kansas City and play Sunday Night Football. Another one in front of the nation. Another thing about Chris Conley, and it was funny because talking to him on Wednesday, he said that he's the best blocking receiver in the NFL, and he still believes it. And he said that he only knows how to play football one way, full speed and physical. I said, oh, yeah, man, this guy right here, he's going to fit in. And I don't think this is just a couple week type of thing. He's going to fit in, at least from a mindset perspective. We'll get that right. For you, getting that whole process down, acclimating with a new team, you know, like coming in, like what do you think is the key for that?
I think for him it's just, you know, finding his fit. I mean, I don't know if they're going to put him inside, outside, but I just think that don't worry about him learning the whole, you know, X, Z, H, or whatever, in any wide receiver set. Just focus on one and let him be good at that. I mean, because right now, you know, his head is probably spinning because it's probably the same routes, maybe different technique, but different terminology. So once he gets the terminology down and the concept of the route tree on how they want to run it, I think he can be successful. But right now, just make it simple, put him at X, be on the line of scrimmage, and just let him make plays there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Last thing. This Texans team, and I featured it on Whiteboard Wednesday, these guys are allowing 164 yards rushing per game. Now, there's things that go into it. But one thing that I see, you look at these linebackers like Kamal Grugier-Hill, like these guys are undersized. Some of them are like hybrid types, right? Jalen Reeves-Maben, You know, these are guys that I've seen at that second level just get moved out of the way. But then also, what do we talk about with Derrick Henry? Any DB or most linebackers, you match him up, he usually wins that battle. So I think this week is an opportunity for Henry. What are your thoughts on how Derrick Henry has been over the last, you know, we're looking at a three-game, 100-yard rushing streak.
I think he's been phenomenal. If you look at the first two games that he played, you know, he was running more side to side and didn't have a good feel of the game. And I think that had to do to just not playing in the preseason and really practicing just the speed of the game. But once he understood the speed of the game and understood that, you know, hitting that hole, making one cut and go, then he had the chance to be really, really successful. I mean, look at what he's doing. The one thing I love about him is even though he may get hit by four or five people, he's staying in front of the chain. So as opposed to it being second and seven, it's second and three, second and four. So now it makes it easier for the play caller for Ty Downey. So he doesn't just make the offensive line better, the receivers better. He's making your offensive coordinator better because they're consistently staying in front of the chain. And when we run that outside zone, when he runs that outside zone, he's making one stick and he's gone.
Yeah.
And when you got that big old truck coming at you, you ain't going to want to be in the way. And that's exactly what's been happening because sometimes if you look at last week, he wasn't even getting touched until about 3 or 4 yards, and then he just falls forward. It's second and one.
Business decision. There were a couple games there. Hey, a couple runs there in that past game actually where I was like, I wonder if the Derrick Henry from 2020 would have housed that one.
Yeah, he would.
What are your thoughts? Does he still got the gas?
He still got some gas, but I just think that he's not the Henry when
he had 1,000
yards. But I still think he's still going to get between 1,500 and 1,600 yards, and that's very, very well in this league. So I know he's not the guy that he was when he had the 2,000 yards, but he's still having those physical punishing runs. And that's a good sign.
Yeah, that wears them down. And that's something else to key in on.
With the one-bar face mask.
He got the OJ, the Freeman McNeil face mask. And that's the thing, though. Just piggybacking on what you said, right?
Sir.
30 carries last week. I'm not saying he's going to get that this week. But when you're going against these undersized linebackers, the guys that it just wears and wears. And they're front. You know, they have a couple. Lopez is a solid player.
Right.
They don't have Jonathan Greenard. He's out, so that's something to watch. But they're not the biggest team.
So when you're
going against a bigger team or a smaller team like that, you could weigh on them. And I think that's something that will happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at we always, you know, in the game, we always put up four quarters. You know, when it's fourth quarter, everybody puts up four quarters.
Hold a hand.
So them defensive backs are like, can we just go home?
I'm ready to go.
I'm ready to go. You know, because, man, when that big old joker keeps coming at you in the first and second and third quarter, it's just like wrestling. Eventually, you're going to tap out.
No doubt.
Eventually, you're going to tap out. And that's exactly what's happened because, you know, I know this is a bad run defense, and they're going to put everybody and their mama in the box. But I'll tell you one thing. When he starts getting to the second level and he starts hitting those linebackers and get to the third level, he's hitting that secondary. Mama,
take
with that mannequin.
He's a bad man, even though he looked like Tyrone Hill.
This is David Long, and I'm talking with TD.
When your mind's playing tricks on you.
All right, back from the break. We headed down to H-Town. It's only right that I use some Scarface music coming back from the break. We're going to bring in my guy, man. This is what we do every week. You know what we do? The opposing team, the Titans opposing team, we hit the NFL Nation ESPN reporter. In this case, we got my guy, and he's a former track runner too, so you know he give you a little really good insight. DJ Bienname. DJ, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good man, you know, just out here living the dream, getting ready for this titanic battle between the Texans and Titans this week.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And I touched on your speed, you know, your track running ability. So let's go right to a guy who has plenty of speed himself, and that's Brandon Cooks. First and foremost, is he actually available for trade? Because I saw some rumblings that he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Texans doing a due diligence and seeing what options, you know, what our offers are thrown at them. Obviously, they're not going to give them away.
Right.
But if a team comes and puts a strong offer out there, I would be shocked if they don't, you know, jump at that, especially since you've already heard his name rumbling in the rumor mill. So I'm not surprised. You know, obviously the Texans now what they are, where they aren't really going anywhere. So I wouldn't be shocked if he is traded now. I'm not saying he will be traded. Now, I won't go that far. But, you know, as a GM, you always got to keep your ears open.
What has he meant to Davis Mills? I mean, how big of a presence is he for Mills?
Yeah, no, he's been a big presence for sure. He's the best receiver, even though Nico Collins has taken another step. But Brandon Cooks is, like, for sure their most consistent receiver. You know, he's the guy that he targets on underneath routes. He's the guy that he tries to go to on third downs. He's the guy he tried to go to on fourth downs, too. So that's his go-to target. That's why he leads the team in targets.
Mm-hmm.
It just, for whatever reason, though, I will have to admit that the chemistry hasn't been as good as it was last year. You know, they just haven't been able to produce as many explosive plays. And that's to no fault of each his own. I think that's just more a construction of the offense recently because they're a run-heavy team now. You know, they decided this is what we're going to be. We're going to be a team that's going to run the football. And try to play off of that. You know, like they're trying to get Damian Pierce at least 20 touches per game.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are going to be that committed to the run, you know, that's going to take opportunities away from wide receivers, you know. So I think that's kind of that. But he's for sure been his safety blanket and the guy that he targets the most.
Go figure, Damian Pierce. He's a hard runner. I'll give him that. Maybe not the most elusive, but he's definitely a hard runner. What have you seen from him just as far as how they've been able to transform the offense, as you said, into a run-heavy attack?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a gradual build-up for him. You know, the first couple of weeks he wasn't getting as many carries. Then week three, I believe he scored his first touchdown. Was that a week three or was it week two? But either way, once he had that game where he scored and then he had a 75-yard run against the Chargers, it was basically, all right, this is his offense. And right now, I believe he's top 10 in rushing. I think his number is, I believe, six. Yeah, he has six most rushing yards. And he hasn't even played every game this year. Think about it. He's only played six games. Some guys are ahead of him. I played seven. So, you know, Damian Pierce is a phenomenal back. Good vision, good patience, good quickness. As you said, like, he might not be the fastest. But he can get up out of there, as you saw in the 5-yard run. So it kind of makes sense why they decided to build the offense around him because, you know, just based off of what we've seen, you can't really put the offense on the shoulders of Davis Mills. So you still got to be able to, you know, regardless, still having an efficient offense and a functional offense. And, you know, Davis Mills being in a playoff with Damian Pierce only is going to make him better. And obviously Damian Pierce is the guy that's good enough to where he could be the center piece of the offense.
Got you. Let's flip it to the defensive side of things. And you wrote about this, and I like, you know, some of the points that you made. And when you look at these young defensive backs, man, I'm a big Jalen Petrie fan. I love his game. He will come up and blast you when need be, but he's also rangy. Derek Stingley, though. I know you're huge on Derek Stingley Jr., his ability. Steven Nelson is a feisty corner. But tell me a little bit about this secondary. What's going on there?
Yeah, so right now, man, the secondary has been playing at a very high level for the majority of the year. And you got to think, I mean, right now, the pass defense is top 10 in passer rating and in terms of lowest, like top 10 in lowest passer rating. And I think it's 78%. They're holding quarterbacks to a completion percentage of 60. So they've caught more interceptions than touchdowns they've allowed through the air. So this unit has been extremely productive, man. Again, Derek Stingley caught an interception against the Jaguars. He's second in the team in pass breakups. I know, obviously, you mentioned the other two guys, but Desmond King in the slot.
Yeah, can't forget him.
You remember him, man. I know he was with the Titans at one point, but he's been playing really good football, really good in the slot, smart, hard-nosed, can get into the run, you know, get in the run. And obviously, he's going to play his responsibilities well. And what I've really been impressed with Derek Stingley is every game he's following the number one wide receiver. Granted, he's not like on a quote-unquote island, but he's following the guy whether he has number two, cover two assignment, cover three assignment, quarters assignment, man assignment. He's following whichever receiver is their quote-unquote best guy. And I don't know if it's because of size, because granted, like, Steven Nelson's like 5'10", and the number one receivers they have faced this year that are, like, legitimate have been bigger body guys, like Mike Williams he follows, Devontae Adams he follows, Cortland Sutton he follows. So it kind of makes size, it makes sense from a size standpoint to obviously have a guy that's 6'1", 200 pounds to follow those, you know, those type of receivers instead of Steven Nelson, since he's 5'10". But regardless, he's held his own. He's been able to execute whatever the job and assignment is. He's rarely been beat, like where it's like, okay, he's in coverage and he's out there just getting cooked. You know, even a game against, you know, the Broncos, where I believe Cortland Sutton had like over 100. Most of that wasn't on Stingley, but those two battles, man, those two battles all the way through the game. And that was on his second game in the NFL, I believe, and he was able to hold his own. So I've been really impressed with Stingley. I think if he was in a bigger market, people would be talking about him on a higher level like they do about Sauce. But it is what it is. But he's still playing really, really good football. And so is the rest of that secondary.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Texans reporter DJ Bien-Aimé. DJ, when it comes to the fourth quarter, it just seems like things unravel. Mike Vrabel spoke about it on Wednesday. He said, you know, the first three quarters, they're outscoring teams. I think it was like 99-79. But that fourth quarter comes around, and what the heck is happening?
Man, nobody knows the answer. I don't – Lovie doesn't ask me today because, again, like going into the fourth quarter, the outscoring point is by 10, which is ninth most in the league. It's not like this team is like, you know, barely hanging on like that. Like they're, in terms of the first three quarters, competing with the best, like with everybody. You know, whether it's the Chargers, Colts, Broncos, Raiders, whoever it is, like they're right there with them. And in the fourth quarter, just all falls apart. I think it's a combination of both. But I think if I had to put, you know, put more blame on one side of the ball, I would lean towards the offense, right? Because granted, yes, the defense they're allowing, with the numbers right now, 9 points in the final quarter, fourth most in the NFL, and they're allowing 113 yards, 29th most in the NFL. But in four quarters, in four games, in the fourth quarter, the offense has scored a single point. Against the Raiders, they didn't score a point. Against the Colts, they didn't score a point. Against the Bears, they didn't score a point. Against the Raiders didn't score a point. You know what I'm saying? So, like, at the end of the day, because that number of 9.69 is kind of skewed, in my opinion. Why? Because, like, you really have the 17-point outburst against the Colts, and then you have the 21-point outburst. But really, 21 of those came on a – 7 of the 21 was on a pick 6, right? So that still falls back on the offense. You know what I'm saying? So I would lean towards the offense not being able, for whatever reason, to score when need be, you know, like they did against the Jags, but like that's not really saying much. It's the Jags, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But again, and they were able to score a little bit against the Chargers. I'll give them credit for that. I think they scored 10, but that's like the only time they've been able to do that. If the offense shows up in the fourth, we're talking about right now. This preview is probably a team. Okay, Texans win this. Can they win a division? Or you know, or are the Titans? I mean, like the Texans are nipping at the Titans' heel to try to get in charge of the division. If they were able to execute in the fourth quarter, because again, up by 17 against the Colts in week one. You're tied against the Bears. You're up by 3 against the Broncos. You're up by 3 going into the fourth against the Raiders. If you find a way just to split in those situations, we are talking about a team that's 3-2, 2-3, and we're like, well, if they can just, you know, well, you know, 3-3 or whatever it was, if they can just find a way against the Titans, now we're talking about a team that could potentially win the AFC South versus now they're one of two teams in the whole entire NFL with only one win.
Yeah, it's crazy. 1-4-1. That being said, they have a new coach in there, Lovie Smith. What's the mindset? Like, what's the mentality in the locker room? How is that vibe? Because, I mean, look, man, no one likes to win or lose, rather. And with one win, it's got to be tough.
I mean, they're still hanging their heads high because they know that they're not a typical bad team, right? Yes, you are what your record says you are per Bill Parcells, but they're not as bad as the record would indicate. Again, as the numbers show, they're in the game right there with everybody until that final quarter, and then things come off the rails for whatever reason. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of gives you them hope that they're a lot closer than what the overall record might say. And on top of that, like, you know, Lovie has a really good pulse on the team. You know, you can see his imprint defensively for sure. You can see the imprint on the offensive side of the ball as he wants to be a, you know, tough mine is ground and pound type of team. So I think that, man, you know, granted they're losing games, but they're not checked out on Lovie. If it's a day where I would say that, but right now I haven't got the sense that they're checked out on him.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Texans reporter DJ Bien-Aimé. DJ, just to swing back to the defense real quick, when you look at these linebackers, you know, you're looking at Kyle Magruja-Hill, Christian Kirksey, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, these types, Christian Harris. You know, these are guys that, in my opinion, you know, they're undersized, but they're still finding a way. What have you seen from them in run defense? Because, I mean, look, we'll call a spade, $1.64 per game is that's terrible.
Yeah. Just not for them not consistently executing their run fits. You know, there's plenty of times where you see a linebacker overrun it and then get out of his assigned gap on whichever play they call defensively. And, you know, running backs have been able to exploit it. You know, obviously the D-line could be a little bit better to contain some of that penetration. But, I mean, obviously, man, like linebackers for sure a big need for them. Because it's just weird because, like, in the pass game, like, they're fine there. It's just a run game, man. Like, they just can't consistently, like, okay, yeah, they're making a play here and there. But, like, in terms of consistently making play after play after play in the run game, they've just struggled at it throughout the year, man. And it's one of the reasons, well, that's another reason why they're not, you know, instead of this weekend being, hey, can the Texans take control of this division or take the lead in the division? It's, oh, well, you know, let's see if they can just, you know, compete and stop Derrick Henry and steal a win and just to get to 2-4-1, you know what I'm saying? Because, again, they beat the Jags, and they were up 17 against the Colts. If those two problems they have, fourth quarter and stopping the run, if they were able to at least be average in both categories. Now we're talking, again, we're talking about a completely different season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And if you want to see an undersized linebacker play against the run, watch this weekend. Watch on Sunday. The guy who brought us in, David Long Jr., the guy who brought us into this segment, that dude has such a – he's able to weave around blocks and just get in there. You're going to see, man, the dude plays like he's on fire, man. I can't wait to talk to you after that game because he's a big-time player. Anything in the works this week that we need to have these listeners be on the lookout for?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, writing about the fourth quarter woes for the Texans overall. So that's what I'm really working on. It is funny, though, because the Titans also have offensively fourth quarter woes. I think they're also averaging like 6.8 points in a fourth quarter, which is basically 8 points per game.
Yeah, they scored one. Yeah, I think it was one touchdown. It's something crazy. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So that's going to be an interesting game in that fourth quarter. But if they can't stop Derrick Henry, then they ain't got no shot. So
yeah.
I think Lovie's going to have to switch up the game plan and, like, kind of abandon some of his too high stuff and let his corners on the outside just kind of, like, you know, lock up, since we're just being honest. Like, Robert Woods, you know, that's not really – at this point in his career, that's not really scaring anybody. You know, I think you can leave Derrick Stingley and Steven Nelson on the island and you just try to load up that box.
Hey, you're speaking facts, man. Definitely speaking facts. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I'm going to definitely hit you up when I get to H-Town, man. We have to link up, and I look forward to catching up, man.
I appreciate it.
All right, I'll holler. So that was NFL Nation Texans reporter DJ Bien-Aimé. Appreciate him coming on. It's always good catching up with homies, man. I remember when he was considering this job, man, and I told him, absolutely, you have to do it. And here we are, fellow AFC South division reporters. So it's great to talk to him. Appreciate DJ coming on. Appreciate Chris Sanders making it happen. Also, David James, you know, over there hitting the switches, keeping this thing rolling. Appreciate you, man. We're going to keep it moving. You got the Chiefs coming up the week after, but first things first, you can't bypass them. You got to look at the Texans, and it's going to be a game. They've been close ones. So definitely continue to check us out. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere you hear your outstanding listening opportunities. We appreciate you. Go ahead, subscribe, rate, review. We're out of here. God bless and good night.